For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
This isn't declassified. It's just improperly handled. Now, what is it? We'll see. We'll see in the unsealing, and that may not tell us everything still because of the serious nature of all of this.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, 5:07 in the PM on a Friday, August the 12th, 2022. Chris, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm really good. You know, Speaker Pelosi there didn't sound too sure about what they have. Will it be damaging or not? It was like, well, we'll have to wait and see, and this and that. It was not turned over properly. You know, she was kind of softening up. It seems the charges that the Justice Department are leveling. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just me.
She doesn't get to make that determination. The Trump administration. Here's the problem with this whole argument. They're saying the latest that the New York Times and Politico and all, like, they're so gleeful. Now they're saying he committed espionage.
Yeah.
Whoa. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. Donald Trump and his administration were the classifiers of this information, and you're going to get into a lot of word games now because Kash Patel, who was in the security app, the national security apparatus in the administration, has just gone on television and said, no, all those documents were declassified. That's why he had them with him in Mar-a-Lago. So now we're going to get into this tit for tat, and this is starting to sound like every other allegation they've thrown at Trump over the last 6.5 years.
Now, our esteemed leader was saying before we came on the air that the administration can designate documents as unclassified, but it still has to go through a government process before they're officially declassified. I'm wondering. I don't know. I thought the president had the power unilaterally to declassify documents on his own.
You're correct. But then, Chris, okay, once the president says – so he does get to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there has to be a bunch of stuff that's checked off to confirm that.
Yeah.
So you are 1,000% correct. He unilaterally – can declassify anything. He can, the JFK papers, Area 51, whatever he wants to declassify, he can. But then they've got to, like, run it through the mill, basically. And maybe that wasn't done. We don't know.
If the president designates it as declassified, but it hasn't gone through the process, is it officially declassified? Mm-hmm. I think that seems to be the legal gray area is where we're at right now.
And you know why it's a gray area? Because every single president in modern times has done what Donald Trump has done and not been called on it to this level. Nobody else has had their home raided and their records recovered, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hillary Clinton, was not a classifier, right? She did not get to be as much as she wanted to be president, she never was. So all that stuff that she had on the server in Colorado was arguably improperly retained, and I don't think she has served a day in jail over it.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are stolen nuke docs, according to the red letter headlines on the cover of Drudge Report.
My question is, if the president says it's declassified, that's the first step of making that process go. But does that mean if that's all the only step that it's gotten to, is it actually declassified?
Yeah, this is the day, and he's been a pretty stalwart guest every Friday, and he, you know, has some reasons for being off today. But this is the reason we could have used Zach today to maybe give us a legal reasoning on this.
Mm. Hey, shout out to everybody who is watching and listening to us on Facebook.com or on Rumble.com. Folks, we are approaching 14,000 Rumble subscribers.
So great.
Which is insane.
It's awesome.
And fantastic. And we are approaching 3,800 Facebook followers and nearly 3,200 likes, which
Beautiful.
Is great. Let's
Beautiful.
Get those numbers up. Keep them
up.
And Katie, I know you can always see all the comments better than we can. We got a lot of people chit-chatting with each other.
Let's see.
On the Facebook feed today.
We have Linda.
Linda.
Yes, Linda is there. Amy is there. Kellum is there. We have Charles, who is there, and a couple of others. They're all just saying happy Friday, engaging with each other. Thank you guys for joining us. We love you on the live stream. We love your comments. Please keep them coming.
And the magic mirror looks very nice today. You must have polished it up.
I sure did.
So we
wax on, wax off.
We forgot that, and shame on us. We have a very special additional guest that will be joining us today and most Fridays. That would be Dr. Aaron Hedlund. And Chris, we can ask him our Hancock Amendment question. I found a research paper from the Harry S. Truman School of Public Affairs at the University of Missouri, published in 2012. So some of the specific data they're talking about may not be relevant 10 years later, but the abstract at the very beginning, I think, explains the Hancock Amendment, although it's a little bit as clear as mud as I'm reading it. So let me just read this because caller Sean. No. Tom.
Chris.
Tom. Chris. Tom, Chris, Bill, Jim, Chris. Chris. Caller Chris, the truck driver, had a question. So, Chris, you can look this up online. This is a this is an amendment. And we'll ask Dr. Aaron Hedlund about this at 525. In 1980, okay. The Hancock Amendment requires the state to refund money to income taxpayers when revenues are in excess of a percentage based upon the personal income of Missourians.
So there's a formula.
There's a formula. Yeah, you're exactly right, Chris. And what it says here, it says blah, 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 blah. But then it says it is on. So there were some refunds in the late 90s, but it is unlikely the refund provision will be invoked anytime soon, because the state is at least $3 billion below the revenue threshold. Now, that was 2012.
Oh, okay.
With all of this massive influx, Chris, of COVID cash and all this other stuff we've gotten where we have massive excess revenues, great question for Dr. Aaron Hedlund. Are we approaching a point where lawmakers need to be aware of the fact in the governor's office that they could have some money automatically taken out of the budget and refunded to taxpayers?
I would think so. Or, you know, we may have politicians that advocate we should use that money and put it in the rainy day fund since we have a surplus. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Tim?
Rainy day funds are great, especially when you look at Joe Biden, what he's been doing to our reserves of our country, spending them all. And it's good, I think, for the states to have some surpluses, mm-hmm. because I think we're still. I don't think we're out of the woods yet on this economy, on this rocky road we have been on. Oh, Chris, we have another caller today.
Oh,
it's Open Line Friday. Tom has a question or a comment, I believe, about Chris's corner.
Uh-oh.
Tom, good afternoon. Welcome to 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. You're on the air. You're on the line. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, thank you. I wanted to comment on the adoption versus abortion comment. Back in 1986, anyway, my wife and I adopted a child. She was 2 weeks old when she got her. The mother decided to put the child up for adoption. And, you know, we're very happy. My wife was not able to get pregnant. And so it was a blessing. Now, when she was a teenager, she actually had the opportunity to meet her birth mother. Turned out to be a great experience. And, in fact, she still has contact with her. My wife has since passed, 15 years ago, but, 30 some years later, this child that we adopted, she's a mother of her own now. She actually went through two failed pregnancies. The second pregnancy, she actually, had a stillborn, and then the other, it was twins, and the other one came a couple of weeks later, but it wasn't long far enough. Guys, I actually held both those little infants in the palm of my hand. And I'm telling you what, anybody that tells you that's not a live human being is just, in my opinion, is just as evil can be.
Amen. Okay? Amen. So,
Tom, thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you
Tom,
for your call.
Really, thank you. What a beautiful story for a Friday afternoon. Chris, that's your corner inspired him to come in to come on and tell us that story, beautiful story.
Really, really appreciate that. And, you know, we were discussing during the break is, you know, how is there even any question between, on one hand, abortion, on the other hand, adoption, and who in their right mind is, as Chris said, is it's pure evil that we even advocate for that, like this Texas law professor that says, you know, it's really better to abort the child than adoption. It's not a viable option. in many cases. That's mm-hmm. insanity.
It really is. Thank you, Tom. Thank you to all of our callers today.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a couple great guests coming up at 5:25. We'll speak to Dr. Aaron Hedlund of the Show Me Institute, our resident economist, and Admiral Chuck Williams to help us wrap up this hour at 5:42, talking about the national security implications of the Mar-a-Lago raid. How about I do a little stump speech before we wrap up this segment?
Listen to me, listen to me.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
So that's another reason we need communism.
It's time for the Speaker's Stump Speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
So, my question today for all of y'all in the Stump Speech is, are we entering a post-constitutional dystopia? I got the germ of that idea from a segment that Mark Levin did this week, saying we're staring over the precipice of a post-constitutional America. I'm wondering if we're in a post-constitutional dystopia, and I've got some thought candy for you to chew on to see what do all of these movies have in common, and that might suggest that we may be entering such a world indeed here. And I'm sure you can think of some more. So here's what I wrote down quickly before the show started. 1984. Well, I don't know if they ever made a movie out of that. Definitely the George Orwell book. The Hunger Games, Fahrenheit 451, another fantastic novel. Children of Men. Either of you see Children of Men? Clive Owen, really good movie. The Matrix, Blade Runner, another awesome. And the remake was pretty good, too.
It was.
All of the Terminator movies.
Yes.
All of the Resident Evil movies, with one of my favorite actresses, hubba hubba, Mila Jovovich. Minority Report. With Tom Cruise, where they could predict crimes before they happened. Mad Max, that newest one they made, Fury Road.
Oh, with Tom Hardy?
Yeah.
He was Max.
Fantastic. Ready Player One, did you see that one? Really cool.
So kind of
futuristic, apocalyptic movie. And V for Vendetta, which was creepy. I could go on and on and on and on and on and on. What do all of these post-apocalyptic dystopian futuristic novels have in common? They all deal with a world with an ever-encroaching, ever-enlarging, authoritarian, oppressive government. A very strong government. A very heavy-handed government. That's exactly what Democrats and the left in this country are supporting, promoting, and creating. Those are not Republican ideals. Republicans believe in individual liberty and freedom, opportunity for everyone to pursue life, liberty, and their own happiness. In all of these movies, which a lot of them, well, all of them, were created in Hollyweird, a lot of times, don't we always say, Vic Porcelli is famous for saying, everything they say, the opposite is true, the old Exploit principle. The other thing we always say is everything that they project on us, they're already guilty of accomplishing. They're the ones that want government to have more power. They're the ones that want government to tax more, to spend more, to force us into some green energy fever dream that will never be effectuated in reality. They're the ones that want to remove constitutional rights and make up things that really aren't rights at all, that are just an oppression on people. They're the ones that want to end life, not create it. They're the ones that want to take away freedom, not grant more of it. They're the ones that want to define your happiness for you, not let you pursue it for yourself. If you take the time this weekend to watch any of those flicks I mentioned or your other favorite dystopian post-apocalyptic future film, I would urge you to see if there's commonality in those as well. All of those governments have all the elements of what today's far left and today's Democratic Party is trying to create in this America. I really hope that Mark Levin is wrong and that all of us who are so concerned about living in a post-constitutional America are dead wrong as well. Thank goodness we've got another election right on the horizon. Y'all are going to need to go out and vote so we don't find ourselves in our own version of the Hunger Games. And that's the stump speech for today, August the 12th, 2022.
That is a creepy stump speech.
Sorry.
Hope we don't get there.
I had a real happy one yesterday.
You did. Balance it out.
Yeah.
We all deserve balance.
It doesn't have to come true.
It doesn't.
But the only way it's not going to is if everybody exercises their right to vote this November and we stop having these 30 and 35% voter turnouts. Everybody should be really concerned about what's happening right now. Chris and Katie, we're going to speak with Dr. Aaron Hedlund next about the Inflation Reduction Act that was just passed by one Speaker Pelosi. See, get the good doctor's thoughts on it and see if it really will reduce inflation or not. When we come back at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Did the president watch Merrick Garland's statement today?
As you know, he's in South Carolina with his family at this time. I've not spoken to him. He's taking a little time, still doing the work of the American people, but taking some time with his family.
So I wonder if Joe Biden knows anything about the Inflation Reduction Act, since he didn't know anything about the FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago. I wonder if he knows anything about anything. Yeah, where's he been? I mean, have we seen him, Chris? You keep track of the president's schedule. Is he back? Is he not back? What's he doing?
He's on vacation.
Oh.
He's at this island in South Carolina.
He's at Kiwa Island. That's why they're there. That's why Fox is there.
He's on, you know, the Congress takes all of August off for a recess.
Oh, nice.
And traditionally, the president also takes vacation. And so he's spending his vacation on an island in South Carolina. It's someone's house, renting the house. If you remember, President Obama in August would go to Martha's Vineyard and stay at some billionaire's house for the month of August. So the president, after a hard year, 6 months, 8 months of working, he's taking a well-deserved vacation and having all the ice cream in the world that he wants.
Let me tell you, there are some homes on Kiowa Island. I can imagine which one he might be staying in. Mm-hmm. There's some big boys on that island, and you look at them and you're like, who are these people?
How do they do this?
We rented a nice place, but it was normal, you know, but there's some homes on the end of the island that are tens of millions of dollars. They're massive. It's a beautiful place.
And I got a good feeling that Joe Biden is staying at one of those houses, and Hunter Biden is fitting the bill, paying the bill for the quote unquote big guy.
For the big guy. Hey, let's bring in our big guy next. He is Dr. Aaron Hedlund with the Show Me Institute. At Show Me on Twitter, showmeinstitute.org. Dr. Hedlund, good afternoon to you. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
So, Dr. Hedlund, what say you about the hot off the presses passage of the Inflation Reduction Act? How quickly is inflation going to be reduced, Dr. Hedlund, if at all, if one iota or not, by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's Inflation Reduction Act?
Well, first of all, we'd all be so lucky if they spent more time at the beach and on the island instead of passing ginormous bills, because I can tell you the label Inflation Reduction Act is one of those false advertising situations. It's going to do absolutely nothing to reduce inflation. It's really the same kind of policies we've been seeing over the past year and a half, which is more government spending, higher taxes. Neither one of those things helps bring inflation down.
Dr. Hedlund, one thing that's tucked into the Inflation Reduction Act is a thing that was negotiated by Kyrsten Sinema. She wanted to get rid of the carried interest deduction, and so in compromise, they're putting a 1% excise tax on stock buybacks. What would you say to the critics who say, Dr. Hedlund, look, this is for millionaires, billionaires, it raises $73 billion, what's the big deal?
Right. So first of all, that's that phrase, it's just for millionaires and billionaires, has been uttered many, many times.
Don't blame me for it. I'm just repeating what they say.
No, I know. I mean, number one, those things always get extended further and further down. Secondly, you have to think about the economic ripple effects of all these sorts of things. It's impossible to just pinpoint a tax in one spot because it affects what businesses do, and what businesses do affects workers and consumers. And so all these tax hikes, that the bottom line is that they're going to reduce supply at precisely the time that we need more supply and more production to bring prices down.
Dr. Aaron Hedlund of the Show Me Institute, our guest this afternoon. Dr. Hedlund, I was taking Joe Biden to task yesterday about his comment earlier in the week that inflation was zero in July. Rejoice, rejoice. Dr. Hedlund, I found an article, and I would like you to confirm or let me know where I was wrong on, that said, no. That's just one metric he was referring to. Core inflation was actually up in June and July, the things we actually buy. So once again, is the president trying to mislead the people about exactly what is going on with this historic with these historic inflationary pressures?
Well, I think most of the presidency has been one big spin shop over the past year and a half. So this is just another example of it. And yeah, if you look at the month of July, the latest numbers, first of all, it's still 8.5% over the past year. That's still near 40-year highs. And really what we're seeing is that gas prices came down over the course of the month, no thanks to any kind of policy moves the administration is doing. And that offset increases in everything else. So food prices went up. They've been going up at double digits, fastest pace since 1979. Core inflation, which you referenced a second ago, that's basically everything except food and energy. That went up, and it's basically the same kind of high pace that we saw in the past month in June. So inflation is still very much there. This problem is not remotely solved, and the new bill is not going to help it either.
Dr. Hedlund, labor participation rates in this country have been historically low, not only in this administration, but really going back to Barack Obama. What is the long-term effects for a nation to have a low labor participation rate?
There's all sorts of problems with that. I mean, first of all, it is a problem, and it's something that there have been some long-run trends that have been kind of troubling. We did see between 2017 and 2019 a partial reversal. You actually did see some people coming back off the sidelines, back into the labor force, which to me says it's not a lost cause. I think there is a group out there that says, well, people have left the labor force, they're gone forever, so let's just make them dependent on government. The reality is, no, if you have a really healthy, vibrant economy, they will start to come back. But what you see is we have an entitlement crisis. We have a major long-term budget crisis. The fewer people there are earning wages and paying payroll taxes, the harder it's going to be to deal with the Social Security and just the overall fiscal picture.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Hedlund, on the heels of that, similarly, we also saw a report this week that worker productivity is at all-time lows as well. So is it a misnomer for the Biden administration to simply point to the jobs gained last month and say, that's the end of the story, everything's great, happy days are here again, look, we fixed everything? There's still some real systemic issues in the economy, right, and in our labor force issues, aren't they?
Yeah, it is a well-known fact among economists, and now I'm going to let all the listeners know as well that the labor market tends to operate with a lag. Right? So in other words, first GDP declines, then the labor market goes down. First GDP recovers, then the labor market recovers. So you may recall that from the 2007 and 9 financial crisis, GDP kind of recovered, but then we had multiple years of very slow job growth. And a lot of that was due to bad policies under the Obama-Biden administration, with unemployment benefits getting extended forever and ever. But the key thing here is that what we've seen in the first half of this year is two quarters of GDP declines, which typically means recession. That doesn't mean it's going to continue on. But then the question is, what's driving all that? Well, interest rates are going up fast. Investment has gone negative. Consumer spending has gone flat. And consumer pessimism is near an all-time high. So unless something changes, I anticipate that later on in the year, those job numbers are going to start looking worse and worse.
Dr. Hedlund, how worried are you about the slowdown in China's economy affecting our economy here at home? We're reading reports about China's housing market is slowing down. Their job market is slowing down. We know that our two economies are linked very closely. We're already really in a recession. We've had two declines so far. It's two quarters back to back. Should we be worried about China's economy, sir?
Well, I think what we should really be worried about long-term with China is precisely that we're a little bit too linked. I'm all for trade and kind of a rules-based system internationally, but what we have found is that really too many of our supply chains are dependent on what's going on in China. And China is not just another big economy out there. They are a country that is basically flouting the rules. And that's also one issue, by the way, with this Inflation Reduction Act, quote-unquote, is that the tax hikes hurt manufacturers at precisely the time that we need to have more manufacturing capacity here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Dr. Aaron Hedlund of the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org. Dr. Hedlund, if you were advising Republicans, if they happen to take back Congress next year, what would be some of the things you would suggest they do? Would one of them simply be just don't spend any more money?
Yeah, the simplest thing is to first do no harm, which really means to stop the harm that's coming out of the executive branch right now. So we need to stop spending the money, stop putting more government money into the economy when there's already too much there. And, of course, I'd love to go further and actually have more kind of spending reforms and budgetary reforms and tax cuts that would encourage supply. Of course, we know that 90% of that stuff is maybe 100% of that stuff is not going to get the president's signature. We really need to reignite all cylinders on the energy production front. That seems to me to be a total no-brainer. I think, unfortunately, Senator Manchin got rolled on that one, kind of being told, oh, yeah, we'll have permitting reform that we know aren't going to actually happen.
Dr. Helen, I've read reports in the past that the Chinese government is looking ultimately to turn their currency into a crypto currency. In that way, it will kind of alleviate the dominance of the dollar if they're a cryptocurrency. Do you see that eventually happening, and should the United States be looking to turn the dollar into a cryptocurrency?
Yeah, it's not clear to me how turning the dollar into a cryptocurrency would really solve any of these problems. And I think you're absolutely right that China would like to become the dominant geopolitical force, and they're doing what they can to get there. I mean, they are establishing a foothold in many different continents and funneling tons of money to try to kind of buy political support and whatnot. I don't think it's going to work when it comes to the currency, because for all of our problems, the U.S. is still, you know, the largest, most dynamic economy out there, and we are a safe haven for people during times of global uncertainty. So we've got a lot of issues we got to deal with, particularly in the long-term budgetary picture, but I'm still bottom line an optimist when it comes to America.
Dr. Hedlund, a fellow at the St. Louis Fed. He's also at the Show Me Institute as well, aaronhedlund.com, for all this great wit and wisdom.
I think Aaron gets a new title or a new honor every time he's on. The St. Louis Fed, that's a new one. That's the first time I've heard that one.
I've got to give him a theme, too.
I found that on his Twitter feed.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations, sir. It's probably you have a new honor every time we have you on every week.
Well, thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hedlund, thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend. All right. There he goes. All right, we're going to head to a break here because we've got one more guest. We've had a very busy day today. Admiral Chuck Williams, Admiral Charles Williams, retired Rear Admiral, U.S. Navy, joins us next here as we wrap up this 5 o'clock hour on a very busy Friday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show. We're getting all ravey here.
That's
on
how you
the,
should dance
do you like
to
this
that.
Song?
No.
Electronica.
You don't
it
like
just
it?
Has that. That's how you should dance to
mm-hmm.
it.
What was that again, though?
No, I didn't like it.
No. What was your dance?
The dance moves.
Just whatever. Right? It really doesn't have a name. It just.
It's the Chris Arps.
Yeah. That's how you should dance to that type of
it's
music.
It's the CA.
I love it.
Yeah.
Like high school new girls music.
That's churches, by the way.
I'm sorry if that offended anyone.
No,
it's
right. I am offended.
It does sound like high school cheerleader music.
One more fantastic guest this afternoon. Let's get right to him. He is retired Admiral Charles Williams, served in the U.S. Navy, continues to serve our country in many ways, including having been an appointee in the Trump administration, served up in Washington, D.C. for several years. He's a Missourian. In fact, he's a St. Louisan. He's right here in our backyard. We're so blessed to have him. Admiral Chuck, thanks for being with us today. Welcome back to News Talk STL.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Tim. Always enjoyed being on with you guys.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate you and your insight and expertise. So, Admiral Williams, you and I had you had texted me early in the week and said, you know, there's lots of political complications involved and context to debate with the Mar-a-Lago raid, but you said think also of the national security implications of this. Would you explain that for our audience, please?
Well, an adversary looks at its foe, it looks at how strong it is, what its weaknesses are, and in our democracy, if the president wanted to declare war because of something that happened, let's just say there was a blockade, a naval blockade on an island like Taiwan by the Chinese would be considered an act of war. So would the United States become involved? So the president would have to go to Congress and go to the public and ask for approval. So my thinking is right now, this recent week, we have so further divided this country, much more even than it was, and it was already divided. So if the president were to come and as the commander-in-chief and ask for authority to go to war, how would people react to that? Would they support that? I don't think they would. And so countries like China, Xi Jinping, the leader there, and Putin in Russia, they watch this stuff and they see how we behave and how we react. Look what happened with Afghanistan. Mm. That debacle, to me, that had a lot to do with Putin deciding that the time was right to go into and Ukraine. He saw weakness in the administration and lack of clarity. So I think that an adversary like China, who eventually would like has plans to take back Taiwan and make it part of China, looks at this and sees weakness, and I think it creates a problem for us. So that's why all these acts that take place, they're secondary, there's tertiary implications, and I don't know if the administration is thinking through that, but it's a concern to me.
Admiral, I want to get your perspective on this, of course, as a Navy guy. Reuters had an article saying that during China's Taiwan military exercises, that offered a great spying opportunity for the United States. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would, because they essentially simulated their assault on Taiwan. It was a live fire exercise. I mean, real live missions, ammunition was being fired into the water, some of it right around Taiwan, some of it near Japan and some of these islands. Something could have gone wrong. Fortunately, nothing did. But practicing that type of assault, particularly with their amphibious force, and if there's a weakness on the part of the Chinese, it's probably moving an amphibious force from China over to Taiwan, even though it's only 100 miles, they're susceptible to an attack. So there are things we could learn by watching how they would it's a real live exercise of how they're going to conduct themselves and taking back Taiwan. So, yeah, there are things we could learn from that. But we also do exercises, and they watch our exercises. And right now, our exercises would indicate we'd be victorious, but at the price. So the AP had a report the other day. We would lose one carrier, if not two, seven or eight destroyers, a couple submarines, 70, 80 aircraft, 5,000 plus people. It would be devastating to us, but it's even worse what the results would be to the Chinese. So this is really serious stuff, and it's going to be disastrous for both sides, and hopefully we would be victorious. But again, can the president muster enough energy in this country? And I know I'm getting a little long here, but mm-hmm. You guys might have saw a survey not too long ago, and the survey was, if the United States was attacked, what would the American people do? And it was surprising how many people would not fight for their country. Mm. Now, the follow-on question should have been, will you leave? Will you go to Canada? Or will you just accept a new ruler, if you will, a new governing entity, country? That's a bit scary that people who live in this country may not want to fight for it.
Those are man bun guys, Admiral.
Admiral Williams, I know your time is brief today. Do you got time for one more question, or do you got to run?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm good.
I wanted to ask you about an article that you had sent me recently called Our Fragile Democracy. We're really living in during very tenuous years here, aren't we? And I know you're concerned about the leadership we have at the helm.
Yeah, I am. I mean, you know, there's a couple things. One of the biggest things to me is we have kind of a dual form of justice. It's not like just one rule applies. It depends on who you are. There's like different rules apply to you. And I think anytime a country, a democracy begins to lose a right balance in how you apply laws and to your constituents, the people of a country, that's pretty dangerous. And in that one article, there were four different things mentioned. It was about free and open elections. It was about, you know, taking on responsibility in a democracy. But the rule of law is extremely fragile right now. And the institutions in this country across the board are just displaying Are they playing the game fair for the country? Are they doing what's maybe politically right as opposed to what's right for the constituents? That, to me, is a bit scary for the future of the country.
Admiral, I got an article here in the Military Times. I know you are happily retired here and you've served your country, but the Navy is offering up to $115,000 to join or come back. Do you have any interest, sir?
Yeah, no, not really. Not right now, no. So when I was up there, I mean, China was kind of our number one goal, a lot of focus. And then I had heard maybe a year ago when the Biden administration did come in that it was kind of this wokeism, if you will, the culture issue of the military, number one priority, environment, number two, climate change, number three, resilience, number four, China was number five. China's a real deal. It's a real threat. And it's got to be a little higher to me on the priority list. So recruiting is down. The Army is really hurting. I think they're at about 50% of where they thought they'd be in their goals for recruiting. I'm not exactly sure the Navy number, but they're all challenging. Marine Corps may be doing the best. But it's a problem. Well, you know, if you go to war with somebody, you got to have the people to fight. And do we have a sufficient size military to go to war?
Excellent points indeed. Admiral Charles Williams, our guest here today, U.S. Navy retired, former member of the Trump administration. Admiral Chuck, thanks so much for all the time and for joining Chris and I again today.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Thank
you. I appreciate it. Good luck, guys.
You have a great weekend. Thank you so much. He had to run a touch early there, but we'll have him back again soon. Chris, got an old friend who used to call the old show back in the old days who wants to introduce himself to you.
Oh.
Let's bring in old Rick.
Old Rick.
Rick, thanks for finding us back here on News Talk STL. So excited. It's kind of hard to send out carrier pigeons to everybody. So thanks for finding us, Rick.
Old Rick.
Oh, is he there?
Rick?
Did we lose him?
Now, Ricky, Rick told me
lose
he had 93% on his battery. Hold on now. Let me see if
Katie's,
I'm going to put him on
Katie's going to check.
Come on, old Rick.
Rick may be standing on top of his Winnebago somewhere in Central America. You know, that's what he... No, he's gone.
Darn.
We literally had... I'm not lying. Old Rick tried to call us twice during the show. Both times we had a big guest coming in, so we weren't able to get to him. But
that's unfortunate.
Everybody's finding us, which is wonderful. Folks, we had... so many callers today. I think we had Sean, and we had Chris, and we had old Rick, and we had Tom. Love to
and
ask
Eric too, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if Eric called today or not.
No. He called yesterday though.
Okay.
Want to ask you all of you ladies and gentlemen, please continue to tell your friends. When we talk to you all and you communicate with all of us, we just presume everybody's listening to us, and then we realize no, we got to keep adding listeners every day. So if you all could spread the word, share us on your Facebook and your Twitter. Watch us on Rumble, subscribe to us on all of these channels. We'd really appreciate it. We continue to grow our numbers, and you're helping us do that every single day. Chris, we missed anything this hour? I know we got a couple minutes here left, and anything left on your plate over there you'd like to mention?
No, not really. We've had a big news day today. The warrant was released. We talked about that. That's pretty much been the majority of the news. I did wonder if we had some more time with the general. I know he had to leave. There's a big story that's brewing to me as an African-American that the first four-star African-American is going to be promoted as a general in the Marine Corps real soon. And so I'm excited about that. And it's kind of personal for me because literally a childhood friend of mine through kindergarten, we lost our ways a little bit after high school and everything, but I'm still in contact with him, that he is a brigadier general in the Marines as an African-American.
Cool.
And
that's very cool.
So very, very proud of him and wanted to, as the admiral had a long career in the Navy and seen a lot of things, we wanted to get his thoughts on the, because I think, aren't the Marines and the Navy, aren't they connected in a sense? And
The Marines would always tell you that they take the Navy to where they need to go.
Got it. So I want to get his thoughts on that. Maybe we'll talk about that next time
we have him on. I think the Navy always says the Marines are always bumming a ride off of us.
I love that.
I didn't know any of that to like officer and a gentleman when it was okay, Marines and the Navy work
together.
They're connected. Mm-hmm. They're same branches.
So I
know somebody's going to call and say, Chris, that's completely wrong. I'm sorry if I screwed it up. I know somebody's
simpatico.
Like...
Simpatico.
I've got some funny news for the weekend.
Let's help us
get into the 6 o'clock hour here. By the way, in the 6 o'clock hour, jam-packed hour, we're going to have Larry Behrens of Power of the Future and Representative Curtis Trent. He's a Southwest Missouri state rep who just won a Senate primary, and he's going to talk to us about this pending, this potential special session that may be coming up. So, after 20 years... Tubin the Toucher, Jeffrey Tubin.
Uh-oh. Oh, I was going to say, what?
Tubin the Toucher, don't ask me to tell you that story again, is leaving CNN.
Oh hell no.
He's leaving.
Did
he get fired?
No, he's leaving of his own accord.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
There's so many jokes there.
Canceled. You want to know what Fox's sub-headline is on this?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'm going to say it because it's in Fox. And you don't have to hit the dump button.
Okay.
Tubin returned to CNN's airwaves last year following Zoom masturbation scandal.
Yeah.
Hey, now.
That's what he did, though.
Hey, now. Yeah.
You know what I think it really comes down to is I think he, you know, that's a very embarrassing situation that had to happen to him. He tried to come back, and basically he couldn't beat it. Sorry about that. I couldn't resist.
Down goes Fraser.
I think that's what it ultimately
was. That was really good.
I think that's what it ultimately was.
What a great way to wrap up the hour. Woo! I don't think we can say anything after that, so we won't.
That's what we say. Take us into the Twilight Zone.
We turned this one up to 11, didn't we?
That's for sure.
Yes, we did. All right, folks, stay right here. More of that fun, frivolity, and facts next when we return to the 6 o'clock hour with Larry Behrens of Power of the Future and Representative Curtis Trent. Chris, Katie, and I back right after this here at 101.9 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.